You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast, bringing you the best of geek from week to week. Join your hosts, Dion and Quinny, and the occasional special guest as they talk movies, TV, gaming, toys, comics, and everything in between.
My name is Alethea. My story is true. I am a solitary creature by nature. I have no children, no siblings, no parents. I did once have a husband. If there is fate, who can say? But in the Grand Bazaar of Istanbul, I chose a memento. I like it. Whatever it is, I'm sure it has an interesting story.
So, what will you wish for?
What is your heart's desire?
I do have a question. What does one do with three wishes?
You'll see.
On a scale of one to misleading trailers,
oh my god! Fucking shots fired out of the gate, and the most honest thing that we are going to say. Holy shit.
Welcome to the Periodic Table of Awesome.
Hello. Welcome. Oh, Jill, I love and appreciate you so much because that was, I was watching that just going, wow.
My question on that is, like, speaking of trailers that do not match the final film, is this like that movie Drive?
Hang on, which one's that?
The Ryan Gosling one,
which was way more action-packed apart from just him driving around brutally for 2 hours going,
I'm trying to find somewhere to stream that movie because after I watched The Gray Man, now I want to watch Ryan Gosling movies and I've never appreciated his films before. No, I don't watch Ryan Gosling movies.
I feel like Dion and I have differing opinions on that film.
I feel based on
Dion's love of the Fast and Furious franchise and my love of story and character development.
You love the Fast and the Furious franchise if you've watched them all back to back, Peter. And until you've done that, you have nowhere to go. Although I will highly recommend the other movie called Drive with Mark Dacascos in it.
I was going to say, that's the other one that I know. And I like that one.
Exactly.
A motherfucking spider on your head.
Yeah.
It is a great
dumb film.
Dumbass film.
Super dumb. Real dumb.
Anyway. Hi, I'm Quinny. That's Jill. He's Dion. That's Peter. I don't know. I'm just pointing in random directions.
We have our names on the screen.
They can tell.
Some people are listening and the pointing doesn't help them either. So
no.
You're just going to have to figure it out
If you are listening to this, you can always join us on a Tuesday night around 7:30 when we sit down and review stuff, and maybe sometimes on a Friday on Twitch.
Yeah.
You can watch us.
Maybe.
Or just watch it back on YouTube.
Or subscribe. Or YouTube.
You should also smash that like button and then subscribe to us everywhere. And if you want to, you can give money to the Patreon. We don't have a Patreon.
Don't forget to ring that bell so you get the notifications. I don't know. Do we have a bell?
I don't know, but sooner or later we're going to have a special season of Fortnite just for us. I don't know how
that's
going to work.
Don't make me floss. I don't know how to dance.
No.
Well done. Everyone accomplished exactly everything that we should be doing.
Excellent.
Congratulations. Now, let's get on to this film, which took 3,000 more years than it should have to finish. I don't know. I didn't do it because I didn't do the homework because I'm fucking bad. I'm just going to admit this right now and I apologize. I won't try and derail it apart from one joke, which I will pick my timing. But you have seen it and everyone in the chat has seen it.
I don't think everyone in the chat has seen it.
I was going to say, can we, like, let's be show very, very honest here. Show of hands in the chat, who's seen it, who hasn't. Show of hands in the room, who has seen it, hands up.
Yes.
Okay.
Three out of four.
You don't need to call me out so hard. I actually admitted I didn't see it.
I know, but we just wanted to make it clear.
That's two in a row. Yeah. Did I see 3,000 Years of Longing? Nope.
The joke that is evergreen. So what was your first awareness of this? How did you first see it in terms of what was your first like trailer or did you hear about it or where did you first
My friends it? Worked on the movie, so that's when I knew that there was a new George Miller movie that wasn't a Mad Max coming out.
Right.
I got to see lots of sneaky peeks of behind the scenes. I got to see the pink horses.
Good.
I even have a ring from the set, like a little Persian-y
jewelry
ring. I didn't nick it. My friend nicked it. I'm not going to name names.
Nice.
So you stole from the prop department.
Not me.
Not dare you.
Not personally.
So in fact, you, madam, have received stolen goods is what you're telling us.
Yes, I didn't aid, but I abetted.
Well, that makes my story of just seeing Tilda Swinton less interesting.
Hang on, where did you just see Tilda Swinton?
In the area upon which that I might live near, they were filming down the road at a famous house that I saw them at when it was pissing down. So good on that lady for walking under an umbrella while a assistant held it for her to get to set.
Nice.
Very exciting. There we go. Oh, can't wait for the next story, Dion. Anyway.
Really rubbing shoulders there, aren't you?
Yeah, well.
Yes. Pete, what about you?
The only thing I saw before I saw the movie was an Instagram teaser trailer, which I was like, about.
Mm.
But I was like, I like going into stuff and not really, you know, knowing what to expect or what I'm getting, and I don't really know what I expected, but it wasn't what I got, which can be a good thing.
Yeah.
So there's positives about this. Like the production design is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And you know, not just congratulating Jill's friends here. Like the production design is...
Props were amazing.
Rich in a lot of the scenes, and you know the look of the film in a lot of the scenes is pretty cool, and there are some interesting.
I thoroughly enjoy watching you desperately try to find some positive way of talking.
I'm in a really shitty mood, and I have like things to say, but I just thought I'd like come out of the gate trying to like the enjoyable things about the movie.
I respect that.
Because, you know, people work very hard and they made it look real good. Yeah. I don't know who did the compositing in that one scene. That didn't look real good. Or the lighting for the green screen, that didn't look super great. But, like, you know, there's bigger things to pick on than that.
So. Yeah, there was one green screen moment that was very obvious. I'm like, edges.
Yeah, you know, there's a slider for softening your edges, right? like it's a numerical thing. You can just slide it down a bit, and it's fine. Okay, right, fine, whatever. Yeah, I think my first exposure to it was seeing a trailer, and I'm pretty sure it was basically that trailer that we just saw. And I thought, oh yeah, it looks interesting. Could be kind of fun. You know, it has a whole bunch of things that when you put them together on a piece of paper, you think, oh, yeah, that could be interesting. It's Idris Elba. He's a genie. And Tilda Swinton with a funny accent. Yeah. And it looks sumptuous. Like that particular trailer looks very, you know, lush, lavish, and like there's a big kind of potentially funny, entertaining story in there.
Yeah, I thought it was a quacker. A quirky Australian comedy.
Oh.
I was watching that going, oh, George Miller's made another quacker. Ha ha! Oh, I can't wait to see what's going on. Like, you know, once you've been doing, Mad Max for long enough, which is kind of violent and aggressive, you've got to do something like Babe or Happy Feet.
Well, it's definitely two. Not Mad Max.
No.
No.
No, well, no. I didn't think it was. And no, at no point do I look at 3,000 Years of Longing and go, yeah, that's the speedometer. Ah, witness me. I watched it. I was just the trailer. And I was like, oh, look, Idris Elba's doing a thing. That's weird. Why has he got ears like that? Why has he got a red, purpley, gold goatee? What? Anyway, Tilda Swinton's in this and she does weird. And I like weird.
Yeah.
Was it weird enough?
I've got stuff to say about that.
Okay.
I mean, look, ultimately, like, do you want to do a synopsis? Why don't we synopsize?
Yes. Do you need some buddy? I'd love to synopsize, and I'm not even going to attempt an accent because
there's like, enough of those in this film.
Well, and they're all a bit kind of cod and a bit goofy. Apart, I mean, Idris is doing a wonderful something. While attending a conference in Istanbul, Dr. Alethea Binney happens to encounter a djinn who offers her three wishes in exchange for his freedom. This presents two problems. First, she doubts that he's real. And second, because she's a scholar of story and mythology, she knows all the cautionary tales of wishes gone wrong. The djinn pleads his case by telling her fantastical stories of his past. Eventually, she's beguiled and makes a wish that surprises them both.
And me.
And the whole audience, because it did not track with the character at all.
No.
But that's for spoilers. there are other things that we can talk about before
there are,
we
but
reveal
I will also
that.
Apologize. That synopsis is perhaps more spoilery than I was expecting. Oh. It kind of covers a lot of the plot.
I mean, look, there's really theoretically, the structure of this is something that I am not opposed to. Like, it's certainly not what you're expecting. Really what it is it's a story. And, you know, a lot of the film, the not sumptuous looking parts, takes place in a hotel room with the two main characters wearing, you know, hotel robes. And it's more or less a conversation where we kind of find out, almost feels kind of stage play like. It's just kind of two people talking to each other.
I was thinking it's very stage.
Generally, I love that shit. The idea that this wasn't like a goofy genie wishes goes wrong movie and was something more like that. Like, initially I was like, I can get on board with this. And then some weird shit goes down with gender politics and race politics and fat phobia. And like, by the end, some really weird shit has gone down with all of those things that just made it really hard for me to enjoy all of the enjoyable elements much at all, to be honest. And we can break those down.
Yeah. When you said it was very stagey, I actually thought, like, for a while I was watching it going, this is all in a hotel room. This feels like a stage play. And it's a story about storytelling. It's all about somebody telling the tale of this that happened to them and the other person then interjecting, but with what about this other story? It's a whole bunch of stories. It's based on a collection of five short stories that is called The Djinn in the Nightingale's Eye. It's from 1994, so it's not actually particularly old. And the one thing that I took away from it is that I felt like maybe somewhere in there the author was writing themselves into a story.
But writers and authors never do that.
Never. And 1994, I think, is very revealing as well. That might explain a lot of the problems with this story, because I think maybe 1994, people writing this kind of story maybe weren't quite as socially aware of why a lot of the things that happen and a lot of the character development in this was a bit not great.
I love how you're just skirting around it.
Well, I can't, like, there are some really spoilery, like, some of the things that we need to talk about are really spoilery and we just can't kind of
Can I ask you a relatively non-spoilery question, which was in the synopsis?
Yes.
Yes.
The Grand Bazaar in Istanbul, that whole thing. Has any of you been to the Grand Bazaar?
No.
I have been to the Grand Bazaar. And I was looking at the stuff that I see set in that place in the trailer and I'm like, that's nowhere near the fucking Grand Bazaar. Like, that's bullshit. Like, that's someone's idea of like, oh no, that's what it looks like when you go, it's not what it looks like. You don't find those kind of things. You just get like continuously harassed as you walk about 15 Ks because people want to sell you things. You don't just walk into, look, quirky shop. Those quirky shops are about 3 feet deep because that's what it is. It's a grand bazaar. You walk through the corridors and you see that stuff. And I just kind of thought that was very funny that it's like, oh, I'm just going to pop into this shop and find this mysterious glass object like that. And I'm kind of like, I don't think so.
I'm just going to point out that they didn't go to Istanbul to film this.
I know.
They did have an Istanbul unit. So I'm guessing that there was somebody over there taking
B-roll.
Was it B-roll? Yeah. Yeah.
Was it not Constantinople?
Yes. Where was it shot, Jill, I wonder?
A little suburb called Melrose Park.
Melrose Place.
Which is just west of Ryde.
Right.
Yeah, I just kind of had that sort of thing. It's like, no matter how much you dress it up, it doesn't look like the Grand Bazaar.
No.
Anyway. And if anyone's keen on like the next Mad Max film, they're shooting some extra stuff out there right now if you want to go and look for it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that wouldn't be locked down at all, or people wouldn't get angry with you or be like, oi, what are you doing? You know?
Mm. Yeah, I do remember looking at a few bits of it going, broad. So there is one bit when they're meant to be outdoors in Istanbul, in walking between buildings. And I thought, that looks like the front of Taronga or something. You know, well, like there was this broad open kind of walkway, and I just went, that doesn't look like anything that I can imagine.
Aussies are always going to get this one. Any external shot that's shot in Australia, it's cultural cringe. You just have to try and let it go, because America, like, look at the way that we're attacking this. Americans see something faintly resembling the place where they live, and they're like, oh, that's amazing, I love that place, you know. Australians are just like, oh god, no, don't show my suburb. Oh, that's my bus stop. Fuck.
<You know? laughs> Yeah. Oh my god, the most visceral feeling ever, watching fucking The Wolverine and seeing the Chinese gardens juxtaposed with Ueno in Tokyo and going, ew, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Ew. And fair, because it's the Chinese gardens.
Yes, Japanese, not Japanese.
Yeah, there was always a bit of an issue with that.
Yeah, let's not do that. I remember watching, what was the Spierig Brothers one? Was it Daybreakers?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was shot around Brisbane, and it had a lot of the skyscrapers in the business district of Brisbane in it, but they were shot with blue screen backgrounds on them, and it was cut around. And I was just kind of watching, going, "Oh, that! Oh, I hate that! Hate it!"
Yeah.
Even though it's like, "Yay, something's getting made."
And one other thing that really annoyed me about it is, to get back to the actual film, the hotel room. I know that hotel rooms are kind of going to be the same all over the world, right? But something about this felt incredibly Australian, like a astonishingly Australian international hotel room. Like
was it that thing that the old joke is like, what do you want, a bed? You want like a ladies' room? Yeah. You want a bed in there for a lady? Like, that's an old joke, which I'll do it another time. Sorry, but I just went immediately to that.
Thanks for the teaser, Neil.
Yeah. Thanks for the teaser. No, Sorry. Another time.
I don't know. I found for a thing that is set in a place that is meant to be, you know, magical and brilliant and, you know, Istanbul and all of this stuff, everything felt very plain.
It's a bit pedestrian. Yeah. Especially when, like, the rest of the production was so fabulous.
Mm. And, yeah, like, and especially because we spend so much time in that hotel room. Like,
yeah.
I think the idea was that it was supposed to be juxtaposed with the sumptuous story scenes, and then you come back to the you know,
like Tilda's character having this wonderful, elaborate story played out, and it's just in a white, boring hotel room.
Tilda and Idris are in the hotel room, and Idris is telling the stories of the, you know, when he's been released from the bottle and how he got put back in the bottle. So you're going from a conversation in a hotel room to these magical kind of fantasy, very, very colourful, very high production design scenes. So it can feel a little jarring, but I do think that's intentional, that juxtaposition.
Yeah.
So I'm not mad at it.
No, I'm not mad, but also, you know, whacking a couple of minarets out the window, you know, does not Istanbul make, I'm sorry.
That's so terrible. I mean, the only film that I saw that was Australian made that I didn't have that jarring location sense was Australia.
Oh god.
Because it didn't have any locations in it from Australia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember those Northern Territory canyons quite well that horses can stampede out. Sorry, I've just gone off on a tangent.
It's a whole different issue.
I love the argument that's going on in the chat, though, about, like, where were certain things shot?
The Matrix was Sydney, I believe.
Yes, very much so. Superman Returns, Sydney.
Fox Studios.
I don't know, Jill. I've got so many pent up rants about this, and yeah, I just don't want to take up all of the air.
That's fair.
No,
I will say that it was nice to watch a movie that was more focused on a storytelling aspect rather than a we're just going to show you a bunch of action shots with not much plot. So I enjoyed that, but some of it was just not well executed, and the ending wasn't great, and the weird plot turn that, you know, was the basis of the movie felt forced and
completely unearned.
Yes, and so that stuff was just really unfortunate for me. It didn't pay off into a completely wonderful movie. It just had little bits that I've picked out that were good, and the rest was just kind of, well, didn't try hard enough. I don't know.
My
or
biggest
was
problem
oblivious
with it
to itself.
Yeah, maybe that.
My biggest problem with it was that it sets up and it spends a lot of time setting up a history for the djinn, and going through all of his adventures and everything. And you feel like, okay, maybe this is going to pay off into a story where, like, you know, he's about to have an epic story with her, you know, an adventure or something that feels on par. And it's kind of like massive story, huge characters, big, important, you know, world-shaking events and everything. And it just ends with a fizzle.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, okay, so his character obviously like falls in love with every person that has ever released him from a bottle. Mm. And that seems to be his foil. But then when we get to, you know, okay, well, how's he going to wind up in a weird relationship with Alethea now? And it's just kind of like very blasé, and kind of like he has no say in his feelings about it, because spoiler alert, I'm just gonna say it, she wishes for him to fall in love with her. And I'm like, that doesn't pay off any of the story that he's just been telling the whole movie.
And it is not a smart plot point to have like a British white lady essentially enslave a black man in that way. Like, no.
Also to go against all of her character traits. But it goes against all of her character traits that she has set up in
the
first place.
So this is one of my rants. And, like, look, if we're going to go ahead and spoil it like we just have, then I can do the rant.
I put the logo up. I just put the logo up. It's up. It's gone up.
Okay.
I can't help
it. Right.
I think we're just going to say to everybody in the chat, it's probably not worth paying the money to see in a cinema, because we're telling you right now what you're going to get.
3,000 long years.
Yeah. Yeah. None of you have gone out to do the homework.
No.
So don't bother.
I mean,
if you're listening on the podcast because you genuinely wanted to know if we were going to tell you to watch this film, like, we're not up to ratings, but I think probably none of us are going to tell you to watch this film. So,
No, there'll be some things that, you know, we can recommend in terms of, yes, we are being harsh, but there are things that we could probably recommend. There are people who may enjoy it for certain elements of it. But as an overall, no.
I think the thing we want to critique the most, though, is the storytelling, because that's what the movie is about.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So, and it's too hard to dance around.
It is hard to dance around. Like, so the storytelling, and particularly that strange character twist that ends up in, like, a super problematic situation.
Yes.
You know, when we were first introduced to that character, like, I kind of had that moment of like, oh, I relate to this character. Like, mm-hmm. She's on the plane, she's talking about, you know, she's kind of, you know, she's on her own and she's content and, you know, she's focusing on her work and a little foot is tapping and, like, I do that. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, you don't often get like a female character who is career driven but content to be on her own. That's awesome.
Missing children, isn't missing any element of their life, seems to be.
Yes. And then, you know, later we get like a little tiny bit of her backstory, and like apparently missing children is something that she is. So that was a bit of an irrit when, you know, her backstory was revealed. And of course, there's a miscarriage involved in the backstory, and that's one of the reasons she's so cut off from people. And I'm like, oh, so she's not like, you know, just content to be on her own, like every female in every movie ever. She's lost a child and that has damaged her. Cool. her entire job is to understand stories. And for most of the film, she is so kind of set on like, I know how wishes work. I know how these stories end, and I refuse to get caught up into it. And then, just for no reason, all of a sudden makes the most ridiculous wish that is completely contrary to both of those main character points. Like, I'm content the way I am. Mm. I don't feel that I need anything, and I don't want to fuck around with this wish thing. And suddenly,
I know how this shit works.
Oh, actually, I wish for you to be in love with me. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's like, So what we're actually saying is that, like, women can't be content to be on their own, because deep, deep down, we all just wish for the love of a man and possibly to loop an indentured black man into sex slavery, which is kind of the result of that.
There
and
is so
I
many
don't understand how nobody making
there.
This film went, maybe not that specific thing. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Sounds like directors named George have a problem with people saying no to them. Across the industry. As maybe it's like, oh, my name's George, I'm a director. Great. Excellent. Yes. Love
it. I can't quite wrap my head around is why a director like George Miller looked at this script and went, that. I want to make
because
that.
Because the storytelling element of it does sound so high concept and romantic. And on the face of it, like I said, like I'm really into the idea until you completely flip the character's choices on their head in an extremely misogynistic and racist way somehow. And turn it into that. Like, obviously, a narratologist or whatever her job was would know, A, that wish ain't ever going to turn out well. B, it's never okay to wish for somebody else to love you if they don't have a choice, if that's taking their choice away.
Also, isn't
like,
that
obviously
against,
she knows that.
Isn't that against the genie wish code? Like, wasn't it established very easily and well in Aladdin of, like, no wishing for someone to fall in love with you, not wishing to fall in love with someone else? Like, all of
the
these
The genie
of
code in this film is no wishes for endless wishes. No wishes for big unachievable things like, you know, end world peace. Poverty, yeah, world peace or that.
End world peace. We've got there already. We've been
and there was another one. What was the other one? You can't wish for
more wishes. Come back from the dead or something like that, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, right.
But no, there was
the
no
wishes
about. The
standard ones, but not the love one.
Now I've got a great idea for a new D&D character, a necro genie. He just does everything apart from that. So it's like, I always wish for people back from the dead. Anyway, I'll have to write that. Sorry, bye. I promised I wouldn't derail. Like, sorry.
Like, I found it just super offensive that we kind of set up this character who was super insistent that, like, she's content. And, like, I know that you know, you can be content and sometimes feel lonely and sometimes have needs and sometimes feel like you might want something else. But to turn that completely around in, like, a half-hour conversation in the hotel room, it just felt so disingenuous.
And I want to point out, too, that, like, there was a callback during the film that indicated that she was falling in love with the djinn. And I thought, at what point in his recounting of his life did you fall in love with him?
Yeah.
What did he do that is made it, you feel that way?
Is it the last story? Because that's the only one that I could think of that she may have kind of related to in some way. Like, so the djinn is in his bottle because throughout the course of his history, he has essentially fucked around and found out. Like, it's 3,000 years of fucking around and finding out. Mm. And, yeah, like, is it three or five stories?
Three stories.
Yeah, that are why he's been in the bottle for however long. And, yeah, like, each one of them has a particular kind of element to it, but, I mean, yeah, I don't remember in any of them where I particularly... It's not like we got shots of Alethea going, oh, I understand.
There's no moment in any of his stories where he is the one that's deemed to be likable. It's always who he's talking about. You know, he's talking about the women and the people that he fell in love with that has foiled him into being in a bottle for 3,000 years. So, you know, for someone that likes storytelling, wouldn't she be more inclined to find favor in the characters that he's talking about and not actually himself? He doesn't really do anything to make someone fall in love with him.
No, I mean, he's actually a bit of a kind of a non-starter in his own stories, really, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Was it just the sex thing? Like, that's where I started to get confused. Like,
yeah, it's too confusing.
So there was that.
Yeah. Because the callback was like, it was an audible gulp.
Yeah, the gulp.
And to me, that indicates lust. And I'm like, I'm not feeling any lust from this guy. Like, what is there to lust over?
I mean, it could only possibly be lust in a half-hour conversation in a hotel room.
Yeah. And yes, he's very pretty, you know. Is he very muscular?
Someone that has been content to be alone for so long. He's not really that horny all the time.
Mm. I mean, Idris, but like, still, like, if you like,
but like, I wouldn't be like, oh, fall in love with me.
Well, you probably also wouldn't be like, oh, you're an enslaved person who's begging to be set free, and I have the power to do it. But instead,
I may
force you to be more in my service than ever.
Mm. I mean, but wasn't he really large when he first came out? So he can change his shape as he needs to?
He can.
That's a very attractive quality in a man.
So there was that. And, okay, here's a but why before I get into my other rant. When she first arrives, like, weird stuff starts happening to her before she finds a bottle. Why?
But why?
Fuck, that annoyed me.
There was no payoff for why that was happening to her either. There was no explanation for, she has, she's been predestined to have any of this happen to her, or she can see people
from the other side.
Power as well. Like, there was nothing like that.
Maybe if it had been revealed that she had very hairy legs or something like that, and turns out she had some djinn DNA or something like that.
Yeah.
But no, it was just. And the thing is, the start of the film relies so heavily on these weird little things, like, you know, a weird little elfy person who, you know, freaks her out, and then this god that shows up in the middle of a speaking engagement, and you know, it's creepy as fuck, and you're like, what the fuck? And then they just leave it, never go back to it. It's like, cool, thanks for putting all that effort into setting something up that may have been interesting. Nah, good.
There's also a moment, just back to the character development, there's a moment where she strongly implies, without saying so, that she's neurodiverse, which was another thing that kind of shit me with the way, like, that character turned on its head so quickly. And again, but why? But why put that line in that was such kind of a strong implication of, you know, somebody who is neurodiverse and that's part of what makes her brilliant and interact with the world in a certain way, and then have her, again, behave in the exact opposite way.
I think we should probably do a rating or something, have a clip, and then we'll come back and just, like, go absolutely spare on this, because there is, I mean, there may be a few people who actually want to go and see it. I don't think there's going to be many. And
by the looks on everyone's faces, I've dodged a bullet.
In the, let me tell you, in the audience that I went into on its opening night, where there was me, my partner, and one other person in a big fucking cinema, I was like, oh.
Yeah, look, even my friends that made the movie just said, it was weird. That was about their only review.
I feel like that's what's kind of disappointing, because there are base ingredients to something that could have been really extraordinary. And not just the beautiful production design and all the money that's gone into it. Like the base ingredients of the story could have been a really, really beautiful film.
Yeah.
If it had just been done completely differently.
So it's like a cake, you know. You've got flour, you've got milk, you've got eggs and everything like that. What you do with them, however.
And ultimately it becomes more frustrating when you can see where it could have been absolutely brilliant. And it's making it mad instead.
People are adapting stuff and not making adequate changes.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, is it right. too many let's, changes let's, or not enough? Sorry, yeah, there we go.
I was just well, yeah, who knows? Okay, let's do a rating. Peter, give us a numerical score. And if you in the chat have seen it, which I don't think any of you have, drop a number with that little 100% thingy after it, just so that I know what to look for while I'm gathering things. Mm. Pete, numbers.
I mean, look, based on potential and production design, I would have gone like an 80, but now I'm, you know, subtracting points for misogynistic character development and like weird racist plot lines, and like I've done like minus 10 for fat jokes before, but this is like a minus 30 for extreme fat phobia for me. So that kind of like gets me down to like, I don't know, like 50. Maybe 45 even.
I mean, that's harsh for you.
It's this very one harsh made Pete you. Angry.
Yeah.
I could even go lower. I just have to decide like how mad I am about those.
30, go 30.
Might go down to 40. And yeah, okay, I'll do 40. This is like a reverse auction.
You're going to push those numbers 40, down, 40, 40, 40,
35, 35, 35, 35, 30. Other films have made me angrier than this, but I do think that it's just, it's so many things in it are deeply problematic, and somebody should have pointed it out to them before they spent millions on it.
Yeah. Yes, the industry is pissed. Jill.
I'm just going to go a flat 60.
60? Okay.
Look, the stories that Idris told in the movie were really cool. Like, I dug the stories, like the short stories in the movie, and the production was phenomenal. But the fucking story just did not pay itself off, and it twisted itself backwards that it just didn't make sense anymore. So yeah,
okay,
I'm 60. A bit annoyed.
I'm down there in the areas with Pete. I watched it, I sat there, and I was like, I feel like I should be having feelings about this. I feel like I should be caring more or you know, being more invested or whatever, but I just kept on thinking, no, this is really dumb. You know, the stories are nice, and I think that's the thing. It presents itself as being very smart. Like it says, well, this is about a narratologist. We're going to talk about the story about stories. We're going to explore the craft of stories, and we're going to do so by telling all these stories about, and you know, it's 1001 Arabian Nights. It's Scheherazade. It's all that stuff, but it's not. It's just kind of a dumb film that it doesn't go where it's meant to go. So I'm down there with Pete. I'm 42. Just Ooh. I Ooh. Thought it was. And 40 and the number 2, not 42.
40 as well.
Yes.
Not 40 as well.
It really irked me, and I felt slightly embarrassed. Like, my partner kind of enjoyed it because it was, and this is the opposite side of it, that it was a slower take. It wasn't a big bombastic action film. It wasn't just explosions and stuff like that. This was a story about feelings and stories and emotion and stuff like that. But I still don't think it was good.
Fair.
Shall we go to a clip and then we'll come back and just...
Well, what about my rating? It?
Oh, I don't know. Okay, Dion, would you like to rate it?
Yeah.
Based on this review?
Based on your expert opinions, I am not going to see it in the cinema, unfortunately. And that's my rating.
Cool.
Good there point.
A quick clip and then we'll come back.
Yep. Yeah.
Sounds good.
I am a djinn of modest power, but I begin to understand these transmissions.
Oh, you've learned to speak my language.
This English is straightforward. It's rules quickly learn, I find. Would you like this little Albert for yourself?
No, that can't be good for him. Put him back.
I could expand him. I could speak with him.
No, put him back.
Is that your wish?
This is not possible.
No, it's your obligation.
So, what will you wish for? What is your heart's desire?
Ah, yes. There
we
go.
I don't know who made these music. Fancy.
See, it sounded like the trailer and everything made it sound like kind of fun and funky and fresh and upstanding and kind of like
a Baz Luhrmann vibe.
Thank you. That's exactly what I thought. I was like, oh, it's got that Baz kind of glitzy, glammy kind of stuff.
Yeah. My question is, of the genies / djinns on screen that you've seen of late, where does this one sit?
You know what? It probably runs a little bit close to the theology that they posed in Ms. Marvel of like beings from another realm that get trapped here and these ones make wishes.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's a reasonable kind of thing. I mean... Yeah. Though, do I care?
Oh, you guys are fucking done.
the djinn story and his stories, you know, and Idris Elba's performance and all of that, I didn't have a problem with any of it. I like the design of it. I thought, you know, the graphics in some parts were really pretty. The ones that weren't, green screen and compositing. none of that made me mad. And the stories, had some of the content been different, you know, the stories themselves were good stories, you know, in a different context. I would have really kind of just enjoyed sitting back at it and watching something that's, you know, really well designed and beautiful and a bit of a story and kind of losing yourself in it. It's just a distraction by the other elements that kind of pulled me out of all of that and stopped me from enjoying those things.
And the fact that it doesn't end on a good story. Like you tell three stories like about love and lust and passion and desire and mistakes made and wishes gone wrong. And then you end on a fucking fizzer. Where it's just like she wishes that he would be in love with her, and then it's bad for him, and so
away. Yeah. And then she eventually goes, "That was a bad thing for me to force you to be in love with me. Oops,
yeah.
That didn't occur to me."
But she's also, isn't she, a wishologist?
A narratologist. So her whole thing is like, I've read every story. I know the structure of every story that's ever been told.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Like, did you not, like, how did she not know that that was a bad idea? Like, come on, this is kind of where you're going.
That's why you get pissed off. Right. Because the idea, just from a scripting dialogue sense, the idea that you've got a film kind of based around a genie that desperately wants this person to make three wishes, which most people would want to do, and a person who for very rational reasons is refusing to make those wishes, what a great base for conflict until it just suddenly isn't. I mean, for no good reason.
It sounds like an interesting concept if you imagine like the djinn is just, it physically pains them the longer that someone doesn't wish for something when they're out of the bottle.
Yeah,
I mean,
pretty
that
much.
Could be just kind of like that'd be great, but this just isn't, doesn't sound that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what happens at the end. Like, the world is basically killing him and she's so oblivious to it because she's just, you know, living her life and he's stuck. And then it's not until like he's just about dead when she's like, oh, fuck. Oh, well, I'll just wish for you to go wherever you want to go then. I was like, oh, wow, thanks.
These are the things I should have done to begin with.
Yeah, yes. Gee, thanks. Like, you didn't have to have three wishes. You could have just made the one for him to go where he wanted to go and you would have been done.
But somewhere in there you just decided, no, my wish is to get laid.
I'm like...
And have a sex slave.
Specifically
by Tinder is for. Like...
Yeah.
Like, isn't the moral of all of those stories always wish for the genie to be released? Always grant them freedom because they're centuries of indentured servitude and you should do that because...
But not until you take advantage of them first. Did you learn anything from Aladdin?
Neil Gaiman. The last the extra episode of The Sandman. So it was basically exactly like that.
So, So you need to do the colonial method.
Yes.
First, extract everything that you need out of it and then grant freedom.
Precisely.
Yeah, right.
So this basically is a story about colonialism.
Yeah. But freedom with no infrastructure. It's left to your own devices.
So free.
I used up all your magic and you can't wish for yourself any more happiness. Bye.
Yeah.
So, Pete, I'd really, really love for you to talk a bit about the thing that pissed you off the most, the fat phobia, because there is a sequence in there that I kind of watched and went, wow.
Right. So it wasn't just me. Cool. Because sometimes I worry that I'm kind of oversensitive about that stuff. And as a straight-sized person, I maybe shouldn't bring it up. But, like, Jesus Christ, that is one of the most blatantly, offensively fatphobic things that I've seen in a long time. Again, there was an opportunity to actually make it the opposite. And it just went way down a road.
Guess what? It's on brand for George Miller.
Yeah.
So in one of the stories, there is a king who has a little brother who is, I don't know, perhaps intellectually impaired to some degree. They don't really kind of explain why the little brother needs to be distracted and can't be king. Anyway, the mother wants him to have heirs, so locks him in a room with women. And that drives him to develop a fetish for fat women, essentially. And so this scene...
The bigger,
I think that,
the more
that
beautiful.
Was a predisposition to begin with.
Mm. Yeah, perhaps it was a predisposition. And fetishizing anyone is not cool. Fetishizing fat people for their bodies is not cool. It's super dehumanizing to begin with.
And especially because throughout the rest of the film, they've kind of shied away from nudity. Like
throughout the rest of the film, they shied away from nudity. But these women in his harem are very nude and presented in a way that is, I don't believe, intended to be sexy or flattering, as much as you can actually present fat women in a way that is very sexy and flattering. And it's this whole storyline kind of devolves into the fact that, like, again, it could have been anti-fatphobic as a storyline. Like, if you're going to have a man with a harem of women and it just so happens that they're all fat, like, there is kind of an opportunity to, like, flip a narrative on its head. But instead it kind of turned into this thing where, like, this weird brother is in this weird room and it's supposed to feel, like, super wrong and super disgusting. And at one point
he puts his hand out
and it's, like, covered in some kind of goo, like, just so that we just know that, like, it's super disgusting and gross in there. Anyway, it all...
And then the plot line that culminates in...
It culminates in just a fat joke.
Yeah.
Just like an opportunity to laugh at a fat woman.
Oh, look, a fat person fell down and it was enough
broke
to break
something
a...
because she's so fat. Extraordinary that entire story could exist in that form in this day and age. Just horrendously badly done. and offensive. And maybe that was the way that story was written in the original source material, but we have come a long way since 1994.
You maybe want to take your rating down a couple of notches there.
That was like at least 40 of the points that came off because of
fair
that.
Enough. No, yeah. I'm all
I could take it down further, actually. Do you see my anger?
Sure. Mm. No, I'm all for it. I'm the bad influence. I'm just like, yeah, make it lower.
How now?
Yeah. Proud.
But cow. Why? Cow. But why? But why? But why? But why are we still doing that shit?
Yeah.
It's just not okay.
The thing that I really noticed watching it was the fact that, you know, throughout the rest of the, you know, beautiful women are presented beautifully. And, you know, they are dressed and they are, you know, there's still this whole thing of keeping things covered and everything. But then when you get to these big women, suddenly they are just completely naked with nothing to
modesty.
Yeah. And it feels incredibly lurid, but also they are not presented as sexual. They're presented as something.
Flesh.
Yeah, and kind of, I don't know, ugly or something. I don't know what it was, but there was just a thing about it that you could feel somebody going, ugh.
So it kind of feels freak show, not peep show.
I didn't feel like they were presented as ugly. I thought all of those women were very attractive. But I didn't kind of read it as shameful.
Hmm.
Initially, I didn't until the scene made it clear that it was supposed to be shameful.
Okay.
Initially, I was like, cool, fat ladies.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. You don't, you know, necessarily you see those bodies presented in this context. And then it kind of became, oh, we're supposed to think this is gross. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. When the hand came out with the slime and everything,
that's
and,
what you kind know, of clinched it.
Yeah. It did kind of suddenly go, okay, this is presented as icky. But I mean, also different ways of reading a scene. So
100%. And like I said, it felt like there was kind of an opportunity to do something a bit different with it. And it just went down a well-worn path instead.
Mm.
And then we also got, you know, a whole question as to the conflagration of genius and madness, in the third story where, you know, somebody who is seeking knowledge for the sake of pure knowledge. And then, you kind of go, okay, so is there a question as to whether or not you can seek knowledge and also be mentally healthy? Mm.
But also, like, why didn't that girl wish to be anywhere else but being raped every day?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it didn't occur to her.
There's so much in here that I'm just fascinated. Like, I'm actually more encouraged to watch this eventually, mainly because I'm like, but it seems like the vignettes are great and it's got great set dressing and interesting things, but it's just that the overriding narrative and some of the explanation story is terrible. So it's kind of like it's so close to being actually not bad that it's just like, oh, wow.
Like, the weird racist neighbours were interesting too.
Yeah. And again, why?
Racist
neighbours. To Jill's point that she just said that the, you know, woman who didn't wish to not be raped every day, she also somehow got really good at being raped as part of that story.
Like, yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. That was that her wish or
oh
was that
my God.
Some magical
actually,
thing?
You know what that just fucking reminded me of? Like the bit from Game of Thrones where like Daenerys is first wed off and she's raped all the time until like someone teaches her how to have sex and then oh now she's like the sun and the moon and all that bullshit. And I'm like, this is so fucked up.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it?
Does anyone want to like drop their rating down a bit?
Kind
yeah,
of
yeah. I think
I'm
I
like,
do.
All right.
I'd forgotten that that whole thing of not just the rape, but the thing that, you know, somehow magically she learns to get better at being raped until she is the best victim ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that we're putting it like that, that's super gross as well.
I think I'm going to drop my rating down to 50, actually.
Okie dokie.
Sure.
Down it goes.
Okay. And like now, like if we're gonna like really pick apart all of those stories, what the fuck is with like Sheba being so like easily seduced?
That guitar was sick, Pete, and I will not hear a bad thing about Solomon and his wicked guitar.
I will, however, say one thing that I was uncomfortable with is this has now meant that every fuckwit who ever showed up at a party and bought a guitar
and played fucking Wonderwall
now thinks that they're going to get laid by the Queen of fucking Sheba.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine if Solomon was playing Wonderwall in that vignette? Like, that would have been amazing. My
Baz Luhrmann filming would have been.
My rating would go back up to 60.
I'm just curious now. I want to watch this because I'm like, what the fuck is going on? All right, I kind of want to see this film. Sounds terrible, but good, but terrible.
Yeah.
But good, but terrible.
And I feel like the more threads we pull, the worse it's getting. Like, it's kind of like one of these, like, don't think too hard about the stories.
Don't worry,
Pete. You're going to see the bad stuff.
Don't worry, Pete. I've never thought too hard about a movie ever.
Ah. But yeah, Quinny, the like racist neighbors were.
What were they there for?
They were there to be like, this movie isn't racist. What are you talking about?
Yeah, the racist part, not the rest of it.
We're pointing out obvious racism. We can't be racist.
Yes. And we certainly can't make any comment about the fact that the lead character is in a weird sex slave relationship with a black man.
I would like you to meet my enslaved person.
Oh, we're racist, but he's hot.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It also
I'm
gross.
Even more confused about what this movie is about. What the hell is 3,000 years of longing? How long?
2,999 years of shit.
2,999 years too long, it sounds like. Yeah. Oh, well, that's just that's just weird. But okay. I'm down.
That was low-hanging fruit.
Sure.
Anything else that we found that we wanted to talk about, other than the fact that it ends in Sydney Park?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Did they feed the ducks and all of
no,
the
no,
terrible,
no, no,
terrible.
Centennial Park, Sydney Park.
Sydney Park.
You know, the built
the park
one.
That I frequent to see all of the doggos.
Yes.
Sure.
You want a good park to just dog watch? Sydney Park is your place.
It is.
Yeah, but like that hill that they walked up, that's the hill I picnic on every time. Yep. So like, it's been immortalized.
Yes. I did look at it and I just went, Sydney Park. Oh, they've put some different lights.
They put some lamps on the grass. Cool.
Perfect.
I mean, to be fair, like the hill in that park does look a little bit like some of the London parks, like Hampstead Heath. Like, I was like, I could read that as London.
I just kind of found it interesting that essentially they weren't wanting any of the other trees or anything. It was just a big curve.
That's because you can't see what's over it because it'll be really obvious it's Sydney.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I was kind of like, okay, good. Yes, and the bit down in a old house down near Dion's place. I mean, yes, that's definitely a scene in which things happen.
Scene was that in?
I think it's in the second story.
Oh, yes. Where she's peeking over a wall and there's a lawn and stuff.
I think so, but also like the place itself is quite interesting because like that particular house has got this big curving staircase with doors all around it and it's kind of ovoid. It's not actually around.
Oh, wait, so it was the indoor scenes with the party with Mig and Gale, who I forgot existed until this movie.
Yes, absolutely, even though she was going to be Wonder Woman at one point.
Yeah, George Miller has never forgotten about Mig and Gale.
No, he's always going back to her and going, sorry, you didn't get to be Wonder Woman, but you get to be in Mad Max and you get to be in this film. And...
Yeah, I just looked at the budget for it. It was $60 million. 60.
Sad. I don't like being negative. I don't like being negative because that's a lot of money and a lot of people put a lot of work into it. And
it was an Aussie production as well.
And, you know, creatives, like people make mistakes all the time, or maybe, you know, they don't make mistakes. They just make things that I don't like, and that's okay. Like it happens. Hmm. It is what it is.
Yeah.
All right.
I'd be intrigued to see what its opening weekend take is like, but I have a funny feeling that it has probably tanked fairly spectacularly.
So far, 6.9 million.
That's more than I thought.
It's an international release anyway.
Not a good number in terms of a $60 million investment.
10% of the budget is not good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what have we got coming up next week?
Something I'm quite excited for, which is a complete turnaround because I was like, oh, man, there's three seasons of something I never started and now I have to watch it all. But I am so into For All Mankind now.
Yeah.
And you haven't even gotten through the one I want people to get through, which is season two. At least get through season two. Season two has some great shit I want to talk about, even though season three is kind of interesting. Season one's a good setup.
I'm almost finished.
Season two takes a good twist, and then season three does the kind of continuation where I'm a bit like, season three's fine. I'm looking forward to season four, but I thought season two was the most interesting.
I've just jumped back into season three and it has reminded me how bad I am with space-based suspense.
Oh, yes. There was a very tense moment an episode ago and I was just like, oh, fuck, oh, fuck.
There's fucking tense moments throughout the entire series. Like, I love watching For All Mankind because it's like, where's the real fucking tense bit? Oh, there it is. Oh, that's fucking painful. And I hate it when they do it, like, in the middle of the episode, but I hate it even more when they do it at the end of the episode. You're like, God damn it.
They've perfected serialization, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, For All Mankind is great.
Mm. That's the review done, man.
You don't even have to come back.
Don't worry about next week. We'll take a night off.
I want to take a brief moment to say that this weekend I also watched Top Gun Maverick. Oh.
And?
I love Star Wars.
But this way they make Star Wars for kids that want to actually join the Navy.
Yeah. It is... Like it's a well-made film and it's shot incredibly and like the jet action stuff is amazing, but it is hilarious how much they didn't even try and hide the fact that they were just doing the trench run, to the point where the graphics actually look the same and some of the dialogue's the same
and some of the shots are the same.
Even the bit like that happens at the end of the film, I was like, wow, shit, you didn't even try, did you? Fucking hell.
Well, so did a Death Star blow up?
Yep.
Oh, fuck.
Did they have to, like, you know, bullseye a womp rat at the end of the trench run?
That's only 2 meters wide? And yep. Get some,
oh, no.
Yeah.
Get a couple of missiles in it? Oh, fuck, it was just, yeah.
Like it's very entertaining, but also holy shit! Like if you thought that things were being obvious,
beautiful to watch. Like I think as an experience where you're watching cinema filmed in dogfights and making planes do and putting an actor in the actual situations to try and make it believable. Great.
Karina asked the question: was I entertained? The
rest of it is just fucking balls.
I was entertained by the visuals of it, but also like extremely annoyed at how dumb it was and also how they put Jennifer Connelly, who I love as an actor, in a film with no reason why she's there.
Nope.
She's a beautiful
Tommy Hilfiger model. She's just every time she's on screen is an ad for Tommy Hilfiger.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
Anyway,
stupid.
There's our review of that. You don't have to have a full review.
And also, they fridged Meg Ryan and Kelly McGillis, and fuck them for that.
Yeah, actually, big time. Good. Yes.
And also, not enough homoerotic shit.
Definitely not.
Bored with it. More gay bits. Yeah,
needed a lot more butt slapping and
way more.
Everybody needed to be 100% more sweaty. I also want to shout out for Karina, who wrote our review for us, which is on the website. That is theperiodictable.com, periodictableofawesome.com. It is a review of Beast.
Another
Idris Elba film.
Sounds like that one's actually better than this one.
Yes. Yes. I kind of got that feeling.
Doesn't it have Charlton Copley in it?
Yes.
Yeah, it was Sharpay Coldplay, that actor who was in
District 9.
District 9 and the A-team. Sharpay,
I don't know, I'm not into movies about people killing animals that are just doing their thing.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, like, I'm sorry, you went into swamp infested crop waters, then you die. Oh, you went into a jungle where there's a lion,
but you
just die.
But you watched Nope and liked it, didn't you, Jill?
Yeah.
That's just an animal doing its thing.
That's not its natural habitat.
How do you know?
That we know of.
When I was 12, I was asked to do like a summer newspaper program where they sent kids to the movies and they put little reviews in the newspaper. And for some strange reason at 12, I was assigned the film The Ghost and the Darkness, which sounds a lot like The Beast.
Yeah.
And it fucking terrified me because I was 12 years old and it was horrendously violent to my memory.
It's fucking great. The Ghost in the Darkness is a great hunting of a lion story with Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas in apartheid South Africa.
That is not a movie you send a 12-year-old
I was so scared. And it
that
was
would have
so
put
violent.
Hair on your chest.
The other one was Romeo and Juliet, which became my favourite film for a very long time.
The Baz one?
The Baz one.
Oh,
we
wow.
love the Baz one.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much, Karina, for writing that. And go and give it a read. It also, funnily enough, covers an awful lot of other ground like Ghost in the Darkness and a bunch of other animals killing people movies.
Cool.
So Deep Blue Sea gets a run, as does Anaconda.
Yeah.
Fucking.
I like movies where animals kill people.
Yeah, me too.
have you seen this? There's a little film called Arachnophobia. That's
you
animals
that
killing
one.
People.
Yes. Yeah. Come on, Karina, where were you on that one?
Yeah.
Gremlins.
Oh,
that's
yes.
not real animals. Anything got anything fun coming up in the next couple of weeks?
I'm going to CRX.
What's CRX?
The Crunchyroll Expo in Melbourne. Not this weekend, but the one after. So if you are in Melbourne, come and say hi.
Yay! Nice. Traveling around. And then coming up some next month, or you've also got somewhere else you're going, Jill?
I'll be at Oz Comic Con the weekend after that, which is the 24th, 25th. And also be at PAX.
And I will be at PAX too. And I will be hosting the great debate at PAX.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Adela will be at PAX as well, and she's hosting the One for All panel.
Oh, and I have just found out that I'm also going to be redoing our fifth, I think it is, year of game development as explained by Sock Puppets.
The Sock Puppet, yes.
Sock Puppets are back, and I'm very excited about that. I do enjoy doing this.
Well, Pete, looks like it's just you and me and a whole bunch of Jean-Claude Van Damme movies for the next month. That's right. That's right. It's like, yay.
How about Dion? You pick a movie. And I'll pick a movie.
Sounds like a democracy.
Guess what?
Not
Dion won't watch it.
That sounds like a democracy, and this is a benevolent dictatorship. So it's okay. We need a
I'm
new system
of
government.
People who are going to PAX, so that'll be great. It'll be nice to see a whole bunch of people down there.
I won't be hosting a panel, but I'll be there.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we can hang out and have a good time.
Yeah, shots. I want to see shots of pictures at the bar.
Shots.
Come on, shots. PAX, Peter, it'll be great.
That's what PAX is.
Thanks.
For.
All right, just leave me. I love that one.
Yeah, it's like, just yeah, you alone with your Van Damme movies.
That's all right. No problem. I'm happy.
Vanity
with
damage,
it.
That's where it's at.
Yes.
Right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our show. Sure. I've been Quinny.
I've been Jill.
I've been Peter.
And I didn't watch the film.
What do you reckon we go on Raid Bar Joe, shall we?
Sure, why not?
Thank you, everybody, and good night.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast. If you have questions, please email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. Find us on our website, www.theperiodictableofawesome.com, where there's links to our iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. Until next time, stay awesome.